We have the privilege of having Tammy and her son, Aaron, come and share with us this morning. They live in the Palisades, and we asked them just to share, because I know we're all wondering and praying for you. And so maybe if you and Aaron can come up. Mitch was going to come, and he wanted to be here, but there was an important meeting in the Palisades, so I'm glad he went, because that was it's very important for him to go to that one, too. So everyone give a warm welcome to Tammy and Aaron.
So I didn't really know where to start exactly, but I think it's hitting me. Sorry. The support has been amazing, so thank you so much, because that's really helped us through everything. So, but I want to give you an idea of how 2025 has started. So I work at UCLA, and I know several of you do as well. And I love my job. Sorry. So I've been there for 20, I'm going my 23rd year, but I've been in this one department for nearly 20 years. And something that I just never thought would happen at UCLA is we got a new leader in our department, and she decided to reorg the entire department, which at first seemed really good, very exciting for us as a department. We have, you know, over 300 people in our department, and my manager, he and I have worked together for 20 years on the same projects and the same team, and we found out probably about like 5 months, 6 months into this reorg that I think the point of the reorg was to get rid of UCLA veterans, I guess, because there weren't a lot of us that seemed to be getting their jobs back. So people, it's hard because we are 100% remote, so you're not in the office, so it's hard to really talk to people. So you don't really know how many people are gone, how many people have just decided, I'm out of here, I can see the writing on the wall. And we just started hearing rumors about, you know, oh, so-and-so, they transferred to UC Berkeley or UC San Diego or UC Irvine, which is fantastic that you can do that in the UC system. But then there are others that they just left altogether, and then others that transferred within UCLA. So my manager and I, you guys might know the Asais, Matt Asai, we brought him to our team about 5 years ago with an introduction from Paul Tamura. That's how we got Matt on our team. But anyway, we started seeing our team was not safe. So, you know, it's just 20-something years and you haven't done a resume is a little eye-opening. So we basically, on Monday the 6th of January, I resigned from my position. And on the 7th, Aaron and I went to the dentist, and my husband works in the Valley, and he said Van Nuys, their power went out because of the winds, and he was heading home because they just told everyone to go home. So Aaron and I, when we were by the time we were done at the dentist, about 12:30 in the afternoon, they're on the 9th floor of Brentwood. And someone said, look out the window. And so we looked out the window toward Palisades, and like this whole hillside is on fire. And then Mitch said he was just a few minutes from the house, and he said, our area, he's like, don't worry about it. The fire is so far from our house. Well, they're right now for our area, they're just calling precautionary measures, you know, pack a bag, just be ready. So he said, you know, my sister-in-law, she had called us and said, you know, just come to our house. They live in Pasadena. So don't worry about it. You know, just spend the night. So he said, I'm just going to swing by the house. I'm almost there. I'll just grab a few items. You guys tell me what you need. And then we'll head over to Monica's in Pasadena. So Aaron and I, we were trying to get back home, but the traffic was so bad. So we met Mitch. Well, before we met Mitch, I have to say this. This would have embarrassed him, which is part of the reason why I think he also didn't say, but this is what, because what happened was Aaron and I said, we'll meet you in West LA. And then we were at this place, of course, on Sattel, eating udon. And we're waiting for him. We finished our food. We're waiting. It's an hour is going by, and I know he's already at the house. So I tried to call him, I can't reach him, and then I'm kind of starting to get a little uneasy, like, what's taking him so long? So, you know, we're getting closer and closer, to him, like 2 hours, and so then Aaron and I said, I don't think they want us to sit here anymore and take up their space. So we left for a parking lot, and then Aaron got a hold of his dad, and he was just like, I can't talk right now, we're putting out a fire at the neighbor's house. And I was like, wait, what? So then he goes, I'll be there in just a few minutes. And so when we called him, or he called us back, and he said, call Kathy and Bud. Those are our next door neighbors. And they live on the corner, and we live in the house next to theirs. And he said, we put out a fire in their tree, he and three other neighbors. And what ended up happening there is, one of the neighbors, he was one of the last in the neighborhood to kind of clear out. I guess people did start clearing out because the smoke was so bad. But then Mitch was still saying, the fire isn't even anywhere near our house. It's just the smoke is getting really bad. But the neighbor had noticed an ember flying, and the neighbor noticed it went straight into our neighbor's palm tree, and it lit it up. But Mitch said there wasn't any other fire around our neighborhood. So the other neighbors and Mitch, they said, we need to put out that palm tree. And so they stayed there for over an hour trying to get this, you know, on the neighbor's roof. Since we're next door to them, they hooked up the faucets to our backyard hoses, and they were trying. And they eventually did put it out, and then they all left. But again, Mitch was still thinking, we'll be back tomorrow, you know, back home. So we drive to Pasadena, and it's pretty evident, like with the news, there's just chaos, and the fire is just getting worse and worse in Palisades and near the Altadena area. So as we're driving on the 134, I'm telling Aaron, oh my gosh, because out of my windshield, I see in the distance the Eaton fire, and that it's like a movie, completely engulfed in flames. And so then we get to my sister-in-law's, and she basically said, I think we need to evacuate. So luckily we go to my mom's house in San Gabriel, which is vacant. And because my mom has been at Atherton Baptist Homes in Alhambra, she had a stroke a couple years ago. So that's very fortunate. So by the time, you know, we got to my mom's house and we were all watching the news, I mean, we're starting to feel like this is not anything that we had ever known or seen before, because it's just, they were showing just walls of fire. And by Wednesday morning, when the news came on, and they had, I guess, someone had a drone or something, and just taking aerial shots of our town and Altadena. That's really, you know, nothing you can ever just think will happen. It's still unbelievable to me. So Thursday, I get a call from Atherton, and they said, my mom is, she's in the ER. So we go to the ER in Alhambra, and they say, I'm sorry, there's no Ruth Wong, no Ruth Wong here. So my brother and I just kind of looked at each other, okay. So we called Atherton, and I already knew, I mean, no offense to Alhambra, but they're small towns, and their hospital's not very large. And so I was a little concerned that she would be there. And it turns out Atherton tracked her, and she was supposed to be at another small hospital nearby, if it wasn't Alhambra. And she was in Cedars-Sinai Huntington Hospital in Pasadena, their ER. And I was so thankful. I don't even know why. She was not supposed to be in Pasadena, definitely. I don't know how she got over there, their ER, but they have a neurostroke unit, and so they took her in the next morning. And she has been there until a couple days ago when she transferred. They got her to transfer back to Atherton, and she is she's doing better and better every day that we went to see her. You know, my mom is 94, so our expectations were, you know, maybe this is, you know, her time to be with our father and our heavenly father, as well as my dad. And my mom has, I think she had other plans because she can't talk, but she has been responsive in terms of her, every day she did something a little bit that showed that she was being responsive. So the first couple days at the hospital, they said she kept trying to remove her GN tubes in her nose. And so they had to wrap this big mitt on her right hand, which is still mobile and functioning, but her left side is immobile from the first stroke. So they said, your mom, the nurses told us that, I think it was on the third day, she figured out a way to tuck the mitt under her chin, and she pulled her right hand out, and then she pulled out the tubes. So the nurses, you know, they were saying, you know, that's definitely not a good thing, but it just shows your mom, she's got spunk, you know, and she's thinking about what she can do to get out of this situation. So in any case, they, of course, put back the GN tubes, which they said, we're sure that's not very pleasant, because the first time it probably wasn't good, and then the second time was probably not good. But we were able to tell her, you know, please don't touch them anymore. We're going to try and do everything we can to see if they can remove them. And she was nodding, and she would start, to just check her responsiveness, we would ask her, you know, mom, you know, can you move your right foot right now? And she would move it. So we just felt, you know, we told her, we're going to do whatever you want. So if you want, don't basically prolong things just for us. We will do whatever you want. We know she's a faithful servant, and she has no fear of, you know, leaving and being with our Heavenly Father. So we feel the same way. And so we also told her, but if you want to fight, we are right here and we will do everything we can to get to wherever we can with you. And she seemed to want to fight. So we had the hospital remove the GN tubes and they put in a G tube so they can feed her from there directly. And she really, we've seen her at Atherton for the last 2 days, and she looks very peaceful, and we're just telling her she needs a lot of rest. So at this point, we're very cautiously optimistic with my mom. And then meanwhile, on Friday, Mitch was able to, he was one of the people that was able to go in with the police, three people at a time, I guess, they were escorting. And he came out and he said, first of all, he said, it's the whole area is devastating. I mean, he says, the news reports are one thing, you're looking at it and you can't believe it, but he said, when you are driving past, you know, the neighborhoods that you knew, and he said, you look down the street and there are no homes. And it's gone, everything's gone. So he said, he was the last person in the police car to get to our house, our address. And he said the first person, she was very lucky, her area, it was untouched, I guess, near the Riviera, I guess, near the golf club, a golf course. And the second person, they were actually a couple that the police had allowed to come in the car, just sitting on each other. The wife was sitting on the husband's lap. And they were going, the two of them, because they had left their area, they somehow had left both their cars at their house when they evacuated. And Mitch said they were driving down their street, and he said it was not looking good because they're driving and there are no homes on both sides of their street, but they lived around a curve, and they said our street is around this corner. And Mitch said they go around the corner and they said there's one house standing, and it's that couple's house. So they're just like, oh my gosh, you know, their car was okay, or their cars were okay, but then they're happy, but then they're looking at their neighbors and they have nothing. So they just told the police, they won't allow you to just drive off. So the couple had to follow the police in his car back to our address. And they were, Mitch was saying, you know, everyone's so nice, like everyone's kind of rooting for you and saying, we hope that your house is okay. So Mitch said, they went down our street, and he said, I started getting really hopeful because the block next to us, we're driving, and I see there's like the one condo unit, and then there's the house, and the house next to them, and then they come up to our neighbor's house in the corner that had the fire, and everyone is fine, and then they turn the corner, and he's like, our house is standing. So he said they only get, you know, they give you like 5 minutes. So he could only, the policeman said, okay, you know, you're on the clock. So he just ran into the house. He just said he tried to grab what he could think of, and then he came out. And so he texted me right away. He said, the house is standing, which he said, I mean, it's all like, I don't know, God's grace. And he said, actually, our neighborhood, which is a very short street, there's like maybe six homes on each side of the street, and that's our block. Everyone on each side, it's as if there wasn't a fire. And so if you look on a map, which some people have told me they did before we knew the house was standing,
they said there was this little area, and I see it too now. It's like a 2-block by 3-block radius that for whatever reason, the homes are untouched and our street happens to be part of that area. But everywhere around it, because we're really close to the high school, is just burned. And so sometimes we were saying it's hard to be joyful when your neighbor has lost everything. So the neighbors, a few of us got together because the one on the corner, she has a lot of numbers of other neighbors. And so she just said, let's try and meet. So we met at a Starbucks just to pass along, share information. And everyone, we're stunned because we're all kind of in that, why is it our neighborhood, it was spared? Because one of the neighbors, she said, they have a very tight-knit group in that area. And she said there's like 8 families, and they're the only family that did not lose their house. So she said everyone is, you're just so thankful, right? And Aaron didn't lose his high school completely, the high school is, I think, 40% or so is damaged. And at this time, what we know, so that's the only time we've been able to see our house is when Mitch saw it, that a few days after the fire. Since then, Aaron, his high school is online, but they are trying really, really hard from my understanding. I talked to a teacher on Friday who's a friend of ours as well, and she said the administration is working on securing, I don't know if it's one location, maybe more than one location, to really have the kids have in-person learning as opposed to online learning, because truly it's the kids definitely need their friends around them and some normalcy through this craziness. So for me, I'm feeling like as difficult or the situation, like just the kind of the way the events have been going, I think my faith is the one thing. It's even stronger, I feel. I think the support and prayers, and thank you, really, thank you all. It's so palpable. It's something you, I definitely felt, you know, especially when you're not knowing what to do or what's going to happen. And then I really feel, I look at things now and I think, well, wait, okay. So I was upset about losing my job. But I mean, the greatest thing is, again, people that are so loving and caring. The 3 people on my team that were probably not going to be staying in our department, we were, I don't know if you want to say recruited or just an opportunity came up in Paul Tamura's area, and they basically took us in. So that is like a huge, huge miracle and blessing, because not only now do we get to work together still on the same team, but we get to work for people that really value us and support us, and we know that we can trust. And so, you know, I'm just so happy that I still get to stay at UCLA and with a group that I really care about. And so that was, I go, okay, so that's good. So then, you know, of course, the second thing, of course, is finding out our house. We have a house to go back to where I know some of our neighbors don't. And I thought when we were together, the neighbors that were in that, they're calling it the wedge. So the neighbors that were there in this wedge, we said maybe we were here or we were spared because maybe there's something that we can help the rest of our community rebuild in any way. I don't know what, but maybe that's something. Maybe if for whatever reason, that's why. And then thirdly is my mom is doing better. And that's, I can't ask for anything more than that. So again, you know, the start of 2025 was a little bit rocky, but I just think, you know, it can only get better from here. So, and Aaron, the one thing I think maybe you can explain in your own words, like how you felt, because you know, if we ask him, he'll just say, yeah, I'm okay. But I don't really know. So
I guess throughout the whole thing I always I always felt worried. My friends were there and they were able to give me a lot of information that I probably didn't have. Like, they were able to give me the website that I would check constantly every day just to see if our house was fine. And every time I noticed that there was a little part next to my high school where our neighborhood was, and it always looked fine. It wasn't as bright orange as it was everywhere else. And that's, I think, what helped get me through, along with praying to God. It's what I used as kind of a crutch to know that our house is probably still fine and that we'll have somewhere to go back to. So after my dad was able to visit and we learned that our house was fine, I felt a huge wave of relief fall over me. But I also, through checking of social media, I saw all my old friends, people I didn't know, other high schoolers, all these other people who have said they lost their homes, talking about their friends who lost their homes. And it kind of just was like how my mom said, it's hard to feel happy when there's so many people who you know or you may not have known, and all the places you've ever been to that are in your area, all the memories you could have made, they're just not there anymore. It's not the same place. And with all this, you know that people are gonna leave, they may not come back, you may not see them again. And it's just hard to kind of realize that we made it, but why did we make it? Because there could have been other people, other homes that could have also been saved, or that could have been saved instead of ours. So I just thank God that we were able to be saved in all this. But I also pray to him and hope that everyone else can restart their lives and live happily even after this. And I hope they realize that this is just another step in their life, and then they can continue, make new bonds, find new people if they have to leave, or just, if they can, stay. Re-talk to everybody else, continue their lives as they did. And I just hope for the best for them and for everyone else who was affected. But it was just really stressful. It's pretty much the baseline, but it's nice to know that our house is fine.
Thank you. Thank you, Tammy and Aaron, for your very genuine sharing. And I thought we could just spend a moment in prayer, not only for Tammy and Aaron and the family, but also their friends, and just even remembering that the nature of grace is not because we deserve it. It's just given to us. And but it's given to us, I believe, in part, that we can share it with other people. And so why don't we just step into grace right now and know that we would never be able to say, well, it's because of this and this that we got what we deserve, because if we got what we deserved, it would be nothing. Okay? So, Father, thank you for